You're listening to Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and we are in your feed today as part of our new midweek podcast episode. We are pulling out an interesting story from this week's show, playing it, and talking a little bit about the story behind the story. Anyway, I am joined here in studio right now by Ariel Van Cleve, who is a Morning Edition producer, and for our purposes, very importantly, you host Weekend Edition Saturday.
Yes.
And afterwards, you're the local host for the radio broadcast of our show.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah. Ariel is kind of Sound Effect's first listener with capital F, capital L.
Yeah.
In the sense of like, you're like the Melania Trump of listening to Sound Effect.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And maybe you could describe like the environment in which you hear the show.
Oh, gosh. I get everything all lined up, ready to go for to do the break before the show actually starts. I have a newscast right before the show actually starts. And then once I actually click the button that fires the show, I sit back and cross my legs and I listen and wait to be either moved to laugh or more often than not moved to tears in some way. Sound Effect definitely pulls at the old heartstrings, which I appreciate. I mean, I love a good story, and I love the fact that you guys get such good characters. It does become a challenge when I have to go back on the air soon after. I know that much.
I love getting feedback from you because I feel like you have this way of listening that is like you give us the full attention to the story, and you have kind of fresh ears, and you open yourself up to the story a little bit, which yeah. is really nice.
Yes, and I do try to get a little warning ahead of time, too. I've asked producer Kevin Kniestead to please let me know if there's something that's going to be especially egregious to listen to, either if it's if it's funny.
Egregious in the best sense.
Yes, of course. If it's going to be like maybe a little too funny and I should keep an eye out for that, or it's going to be a little too sad and I should keep an eye out for that.
We so appreciate your conscientiousness. So I would like to get your impressions on the story we have for today. So this week's show, the theme was a bug in the system. And one of the pieces is an interview with a Seattle attorney, a guy named Bill Marler, who is sort of probably the country's most famous foodborne illness outbreak lawyer.
Right.
And this goes into his backstory and stuff like that. But do you remember listening to this story? What's the story like for you?
I do remember listening to this. It was one of those things where it kind of plays on my own paranoia about food. And it was nice to hear that there has been a lot of change that has happened with regulations and regulating the food to make sure that we're all safe when we're eating. And the fact that the guy is based out of Seattle and has had such a big impact on food safety is a big deal. So it was nice to hear this is what you can do. This is what one dude can do to make everybody else safer. And I like those kinds of stories.
Yeah. And one of the things that struck me about that conversation that I wasn't necessarily expecting was how sort of frank he was about some of the moral compromises that an attorney finds himself in. We'll hear more about that, but I didn't necessarily expect him to go there, and he did. That was pretty cool.
It was. Yeah, I agree. And I like the fact that he talked a lot about the fact that, like, you know, I'm a father, and that's how I view a lot of this is through the prism of me being a dad, and how do I treat... I feel like he was treating all of us like his children. Which I'm not really against.
No, we could do worse.
It's true.
Awesome. Well, let's take a listen to this story from the Sound Effect episode, A Bug in the System. Seattle attorney Bill Marler is himself a bug in the system. A fly in the ointment. A pain in the butt. Well, at least that's the point of view of a big chunk of the food industry. Especially beef, poultry, and even leafy greens. He is the guy who you call if you're unfortunate enough to fall victim to another bug, like E. coli 0157H7, or Salmonella, Listeria, any of the bacteria that somehow works its way into our food production and gets into our guts. That E. coli strain became infamous when 3 people died and hundreds got sick after eating Jack in the Box hamburgers back in 1993.
Words cannot express my sorrow or the sadness of our employees. Our hearts ache for the families and the friends of the young boy and boys who died. Jack in the Box has moved quickly to meet this challenge, and once we determined which meat was contaminated, it was isolated, and it will be destroyed.
That was Robert Nugent, Jack in the Box's CEO in 1993, testifying before a U.S. Senate committee. One of the epicenters of that outbreak was here in Washington State. The E. coli victim who launched Bill Marler's career was a 9-year-old from Redmond named Breanne Kiner. She was one of the survivors. Marler got her a $15 million settlement from Jack in the Box.
Breanne Kiner was sort of the odd poster child of the outbreak. She was hospitalized for 6 months, and I remember seeing her on TV. This was before the family had retained me, and it was like day 36 in the coma, you know, sort of like the hostage crisis in Iran. It was a significant outbreak. There were 4 deaths, children, about 75 kids that suffered acute kidney failure. We were running out of dialysis machines here. They were shipping them in from Minneapolis. From the medical side, it was a war zone. The outbreak was figured out here in the state of Washington, in part because it was somewhat epicentered here, but also because Washington had E. coli 0157 as a reportable disease. Little known was that the Jack in the Box E. coli outbreak actually started in California 2 months earlier. But because California at the time did not require E. coli to be a reportable disease, they were flying blind.
And by that, you mean that the doctors, reportable disease, a doctor is supposed to report to public health authorities.
Exactly. Yeah. And they didn't do that because they weren't required to, like they were here. And so the 50 people who got sick in Southern California were never connected. So therefore, the meat got shipped to the state of Washington. Had California had that requirement, you and I wouldn't be talking today.
Was there a particular moment or client or something that marked a bit of a turning point for you or that illustrates a period where you were transitioning from thinking this more as a job to thinking of this more as a mission?
It's complex when you're a lawyer who makes money off of people's suffering. And so the more someone's suffering, the more valuable their case is. And the more someone suffers, the more you can feel it inside of yourself. And I think as a parent, I think as I saw kids that were like the same age as my kids, I think it was not something that was that client that did it. It was just more of a gradual changing of how I viewed it. Yeah, I'm working on a case now where it's this, you know, just beautiful young 20-year-old gal who had just gotten a job to be Cinderella at Disneyland. And she ate a food product, became sick with E. coli 0157, lost her large intestine, suffered numerous strokes, has required a kidney transplant, and you know, I'm now helping her try to find a help dog because she has seizures like frequently, and at the same time she's trying to go to college. It doesn't take much to sort of feel pretty like I want to go to work and work on that kid's case because it's the right thing to do and it's going to help her, but it's also going to hopefully change an industry's behavior.
So where do you see yourself and litigation more broadly existing in the bigger ecosystem of like regulation, enforcement, public health? Where do you fit in?
I think if you had asked me that question 25 years ago, I would have said, all the lawsuits I bring create change and make people do the right thing and prevent these things from happening. But that's not what happens. Suing people doesn't change behavior. You have to approach it in a much more, shall I say, holistic way. And that, to me, was being much more public about the victims and telling their stories and to do a lot more public outreach to businesses and consumer groups and politicians and to work on legislation and regulation. I actually think the regulatory structure that we now have in the United States is actually functioning. from 1993 to about 2003, about 95% of my law firm's revenue was E. coli cases linked to hamburger. And today, that's zero. Doesn't mean that you can't get sick from eating an undercooked hamburger. You can, and people do. But the mass outbreaks, the mass recalls don't exist anymore. We're starting to see the same thing now happening in leafy greens.
Why is that? I feel like a lot of people don't quite understand. I mean, you can understand why an undercooked hamburger would get you sick, but why would spinach get you sick?
So E. coli 0157 was a product of feedlots. It's now a bug that's environmental. You'll find them in deer, you'll find them in pigs, you'll find it in lakes. A little freaky sort of fact is about 50 E. coli bacterium is enough to make you sick or kill you. 100,000 of them would fit on the head of a pin.
Because even if a small number of those spinach plants or something are contaminated or have pig poop on them or whatever.
When you mix it together, and a great example is the large spinach outbreak in 2006, their version of Jack in the Box. We linked it to a 20-acre organic spinach farm. Not all of the 20 acres of spinach were evenly coated with E. coli. It was in little pockets. And so, but when you harvested it all at the same time and you washed it all at the same time and you bagged it all at the same time, 205 people got sick, 5 people died. Had you just harvested that spinach like the way we used to do spinach, like in bunches and buy it in a grocery store, you probably would not have seen any illnesses.
How do you approach people who have a kind of fatalistic attitude about this? Like, oh, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another. Something's going to get you. We hear every day that, you know, the bacteria in your sponge are going to kill you, you know, different things like that. So how do you approach that attitude?
It's harder for me not to be paranoid because I'm subjected to things on a, you know, daily basis. And certainly, you know, I remember 20 years ago, I was representing a number of kids who got E. coli from a swimming pool, and it was in Atlanta, and I actually wound up being in the ICU with the family when they pulled the plug on their kid. I'd never seen anyone die before, and I was a young dad, and I remember getting on the plane, flying home, coming back to Bainbridge Island, getting home like 6 or 7 in the afternoon, and tacked to the front door was, "Bill, I'm with the kids. We're up at the pool."
From your wife?
Yeah. And I was just, and I drove up to the pool and I got out of the car and I was like, "Get the kids out of the pool. Get them out of the pool." And there were all these, you know, friends of my wife's, and it was our little golf and country club pool. And I've never lived that down. But it was, you know, it was the moment.
Bill Marler is one of the country's best known food safety attorneys. He's based here in Seattle. Thank you so much for talking with us, Bill.
Oh, thanks. It was enjoyable.
That story was on the Sound Effect episode about a bug in the system. I'm Gabriel Spitzer here with Ariel Van Cleve. Ariel, have you ever had like gnarly food poisoning?
I have not, and I am grateful for that.
Yeah. Are you going to triple wash your leafy greens from now on?
You know, I honestly, I have. Ever since, I think it was 2006, right, that the spinach was just out of control. And since that point, I've been hyper paranoid and vigilant.
Well, that's our goal. I think we've achieved our public service mission.
That's right.
Well, Ariel Van Cleve is a Morning Edition producer, Saturday morning host here at KNKX, and Sound Effect's unofficial first listener. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's it for today. We will be back in your feed on Saturday with the condensed version of the full show, and then our midweek podcast episodes will continue where we're pulling out a story like we did today. We are really interested in your feedback on this little podcast experiment that we're doing. Send it to soundeffect@knkx.org. Or you can always find us on Facebook by searching KNKX Sound Effect. That's it. We'll see you in a couple of days.